You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Tens of thousands of protesters have gathered across Russia to protest the arrest of blogger Alexei Navalny. Navalny is one of the Kremlin's most avid critics and is currently serving a sentence of 30 days in prison upon his return from overseas, an arrest which many condemn as politically motivated by the Russian government. Over 3,000 more people have been arrested in the protests. And to find out more, I spoke to professor at Massey University's Centre for Defence and Security Studies and also an expert in Russian politics and foreign policy, Ruben Azizian. Let's start off simply. Who is Alexei Navalny? He's been poisoned, definitely once and suspected another time. In 2017, an attacker threw green antiseptic liquid in his face, damaging his sight. And now he's been arrested and imprisoned. So who is he and why has he evoked such a response from others?
Alexei Navalny is probably the most prominent critic and opposition leader in Russia, who has been consistently exposing corruption in Russian Federation, especially among government officials. So he is definitely seen by the powerful elite in Russia government and the president himself as someone who is become a big problem for the smooth execution of their power.
The arrest has been described as politically motivated to suppress political pluralism in Russia. What do you say to this?
Yeah, definitely. There is a suppression of political pluralism in Russia. It's done in a rather subtle way. It's not, subtle as a definition that maybe can be challenged. Formally, Russia is a democratic country, so they hold regular elections. From a formal point of view, everything is in place. It's not like authoritarian dictatorial regime with no formal pluralistic opportunities. However, in the reality, all the main media is controlled by the state. Elections are manipulated, and definitely, the president has been in power for 20 or so years. So, something is wrong with this kind of democracy in Russia, and people like Navalny are challenging that.
As you just said, Putin has been in power for a long time. What is it, though, now about Navalny and his agenda that has inspired thousands of people in Russia to protest in conditions that are minus 50 degrees Celsius in the middle of a global pandemic, and where they're also well aware that they risk criminal records and being beaten by security forces? What is it about him in particular that has inspired such a response from the people?
This is not the first time that Russians are protesting against Putin's regime. There were protests years ago when Putin and his close comrade Medvedev switched their positions. One was a president, the other one was prime minister, and then it was all a very kind of a manipulative arrangement when Putin stepped aside to follow the constitutional rule that you can't be a president for more than two terms, and then he comes back, and that caused major protest waves all over Russia. So it's not the first time. The protest wave comes and goes, and it depends on a number of things. So you mentioned COVID. I think COVID is one of the reasons why Russians' patience is kind of fading, because Russia has been hit significantly by COVID. The government probably hasn't done enough. It's also manipulating information about the number of COVID patients and so on. But of course, in this particular case, what we are seeing is a number of new things. Most of the protesters in Moscow and other places recently are younger people. And it is, I think, the phenomenon of younger people who cannot be easily manipulated like the older generation by the suggestion that Putin is maybe not a perfect leader, but he's much better than his predecessor, Boris Yeltsin. So for younger people, that kind of argument doesn't work. What they see is limits on freedom. What they see is a popular blogger being poisoned and then being arrested on his return back. So that, of course, has stirred the protest level.
While Navalny called for the protest, he's not the sole reason, as you've said. Corruption within the Russian government is another reason that's been cited. Navalny himself was talking about a billion euro mansion that Putin supposedly has. Can you talk about what sort of corruption there is within the Russian government?
Well, I think it's a well-accepted fact, and even Putin and other leaders have admitted that corruption is a significant problem in Russia, except that every time they talk about corruption, they exclude themselves from the list of the corrupt people. Navalny has used his organization, which is an anti-corruption foundation, which has been referred to by Russian government as agents of foreign influence, clearly an attempt to paint this anti-corruption process as something that is being instigated and supported by Western powers, Western intelligence. That's the best way to distract the Russian population from the real issues. Every time something happens, an opposition starts a campaign, they are immediately branded as agents of the United States and the West. So the palace that was shown, supposedly belonging to Putin, is just, I think, the culmination of many stories by Putin and the Anti-Corruption Foundation about senior government officials who have misappropriated government assets and received huge bribes. Everyone knows this is a big problem in Russia. Everyone in government says something has to be done, but nothing is being done. So Alex Navalny regularly raises the issues, and I think the number of his followers and people who are totally frustrated with the lack of action and, in fact, total degradation of some of the people in government, I think is quite symptomatic and significant.
I want to talk a little bit about the police and security response to the protests. The United States and the European Union have condemned the action of security forces. What do you think the intensity and the violence that we're seeing from security signifies about how the Kremlin feels about the protests?
Well, there's a number of ways the Kremlin can respond to this protest, right? Flexibility is one option, compromise is another one. But I think what makes authoritarian regimes quite different is the lack of willingness, and it's not just Russia, you look at China, lack of willingness actually to compromise. They see compromise as a sign of weakness. They don't want to be seen as weak. And so they normally use tougher methods. So the stronger the opposition, the tougher the response would be, in my opinion, and that's what usually leads to the complete collapse of the regime. Those authoritarian regimes never learn from the mistakes and cases elsewhere. They continue to the end because the stakes are high. They know that if they lose power, they'll probably be under criminal prosecution. They lose their assets and they possibly end up in jail. So the only method they can think of is tougher action. So the law enforcement response was quite tough, but I think they will release most of the people who were detained this time. But if the protests get radicalized, and I think they will, if there's no compromise, if Navalny is not released after 30 days, we can expect more protests, more fights, and the law enforcement will respond even in a more tough way. And that is a scenario that is almost predictable with authoritarian regimes.
Protesters have said that the arrest of Navalny is one of the most serious violations of civil rights in the Russian Federation. What do you think this arrest means for other oppositions of power in Russia in the future?
Well, this is a tough one because while Navalny is very popular and prominent as a blogger, he doesn't run a political party. There are other opposition forces. Some are pretend opposition parties. Others are real opposition parties but don't have many followers. So the opposition movement is very fractured and very divided in Russia. And that has been one of the successes of the regime, that to make sure that the opposition is not united. So Navalny used the smart voting approach, the technical voting approach, to actually do something about this fractured opposition. So he was calling his supporters to pick one candidate and vote for that candidate to make sure that the candidate of the ruling party is not elected. That tactic had partial success. So what we see is that Navalny is one of the opposition leaders, but he has not been able to unify the larger opposition movement in Russia. And there are a number of reasons for that. Some see Navalny as a little bit too radical or a little bit nationalistic. And until that unification of opposition happens, it will be very hard to remove the current regime from power.
You were talking about the waves of protests that we've seen in Russia in the past. And I was wondering if you could talk about how much of a chance this wave of protests has in changing the status quo in Russia.
Yeah, it's another very difficult question to answer because, as I mentioned earlier, protests had happened before. There were expectations that protests would have led to a stronger movement, and that didn't happen. One of the reasons was that President Putin is a very skillful leader in uses various tactics to undermine opposition. And so whether this will lead to stronger protests is hard to say, because again, what we are seeing is a large number of younger people, but people of middle age and older people are still kind of on the sidelines. Whether the younger people can continue the protest level and actually draw others into this movement is something that we'll have to look at. But clearly, if Navalny is not released in 30 days' time, I expect that that movement will continue to grow. One other thing to look at is Belarus, a country that is very close to Russia culturally and historically, experienced major protests a few months ago, and they're still ongoing, but there's no change. The regime is manipulating the system and not willing to quit. So I think Russian protesters will probably look at Belarus as a case study and see whether Belarusian tactic could be amended to make sure that Russian protests are more efficient and effective.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.